The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 217, back to school edition for Monday, August
31st, 2009. Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. As John said, it's the back to school edition, so quit listening to the podcast and get back to school. Thanks very much, folks. No. We're out of here. Oh, wait, no.
No. I was implying that you may actually learn a thing or two by...
So we keep going? We don't just tell them to go back to school and hang up the show for 2 weeks?
Once you're done, then you could go back to studying.
Okay.
Professors John and Dave are here.
That's right. I'm Dave Hamilton here in Durham, New Hampshire. That was Pilot Pete giving the introductions. He's sitting next to me. And John, you are still in Fairfield, Connecticut, as far as you've let us know.
Yes, but not for long, and we'll talk about that at the end of the show.
All right. So, of course, Snow Leopard came out over the end of the last week on Friday, and many people picked it up over the weekend. So we're going to talk quite a bit about that. I did want to mention, though, you know, I mentioned it last week at the start of the show, and I'll mention it again. The new Mac Geek Gab squad forum, and I'm still not happy with squad. I think it's going to be the gang, right?
Crew?
No, it's going to be gang.
Posse?
Mac Geek Gab gang. See, we got that whole thing going.
I like it.
Yep.
It's got the G thing going for it.
All right. G-cubed.
Well, then consider it done. We will, that change will be made. So the new Mac Geek Gab gang forum is out there in the Mac Observer forums, and it's rocking. It's great. We've got people asking questions. We've got people answering questions, and it's not just John and I answering questions. We've got a couple of listeners, actually more than a couple, out there helping people out. It's great. I'm really, really happy with how it's coming, and you can come visit it. You know, go visit macobserver.com, click on forums, and you'll see it right there. But we'll put a link in the show notes too. Before we get into Snow Leopard, I do want to talk about our first sponsor of the show, John, and it is a longtime sponsor of the show, SmileOnMyMac.com. They recently released an iPhone version of Text Expander, which, of course, is a program I use on my Mac regularly. On the Mac, what Text Expander does is it sits in the background, it monitors everything you type, and when you type a certain shortcut, and this is something you go into the system preference pane for Text Expander and define, when you type one of a series of shortcuts, it then goes and fills in all this text. So, you know, you can type, you know, comma sig, comma sig, and boom, it fills in your signature or really whatever you want. If you're filling out forms all the time, and I have my cell phone number and my office number, I have shortcuts for those. So, and I use them so often. I almost used one the other day when I was leaving someone a voicemail. I almost said 0603 instead of actually speaking my office phone number. It's that ingrained in my psyche. So that's Text Expander for the Mac. You can get a free version or a free trial rather. And then it's $14.98 now is the special pricing once you want to register. The iPhone version is $199. Now, it's a similar concept on the iPhone, John, except that, of course, the iPhone doesn't let any third-party developer monitor the entire text input stream. So what you do is you launch the Text Expander Touch app and you compose your email or note or whatever it is you want in there. And then when you're done and you compose using all of the shortcuts and everything, and you can even sync them with your Mac. So if you've got this whole series of shortcuts that you built on your Mac, you just launch Text Expander Touch on the iPhone, you tell it sync up, and boom, it syncs it with the stuff that was on your Mac. So you don't have to re-enter any of this stuff. So then you go and you build it, and then you say send to email or send to a note or whatever it is you want to do with it. That's $1.99. They have an SDK available for developers so that you can hang your app off of this and build Text Expander functionality inside your app or with your app. So we'll put a link to that there too. Yeah,
that's great. Actually, I'm glad you clarified, because when you said $199, I'm like, wow, you know, I really love these guys, but
that's pretty steep.
Sorry,
$199. But that's
a,
now, you know,
it's $1.99. Yes,
excellent. But so a little tale of woe, and then we'll move on here. But actually, I've had hardware problems for the last several days, and I'll tell you about one of them, which is my palm died. My palm tungsten T2.
Right.
And apparently, I hadn't really been paying attention because apparently Palm no longer makes pure PDAs.
No, that's right. No, they're out of
so
that.
So this thing's dead, gig. And then I'm like, wow, you know, what device do I have that I could use to substitute for the Palm, which did calendaring, contactless notes, things like that. You know,
ooh,
and I'm just scratching
Pete's got
my
his
head.
Hand in the air, John.
Ooh, pick me.
Well, no, of course, I have a couple, actually, one for work and one for personal use, iPod Touch.
Right.
The one thing I missed, though, is I was starting to, you know, replace, you know, use the notepad. And I'm like, oh, man, you know, I wish I had a shortcut for the date, because the Palm had that. It had a few built in shortcuts. And one of them was
right.
The shortcut thing, DS, date stamp. And it would put a date stamp in here. So I'm going to guess the Texas Expander could probably handle that easily.
You know, I know it does on the Mac. I will assume that it does on the iPhone. I haven't tested that feature, but we'll throw it out there. So. Cool. Yeah. So, yeah,
well, I'm on their page and they actually do show if you say date, it will do something in a certain format. So I think I may have to look at this in order to, you know, give me back the Palm experience. Which,
there you go.
You know, they were a leader. I don't know.
It's $1.99. The Mac app is downloadable from smileonmymac.com. The iPhone app, you can get a link from smileonmymac.com. But of course, you're going to download that and purchase it through the iTunes App Store. So all available. You can start at smileonmymac.com and that'll get you anywhere, everywhere, anywhere, everywhere. All right. Moving on to Snow Leopard.
I still want to talk about my Palm.
Oh, go ahead. No, yeah,
we'll,
keep talking.
We'll go on.
Okay. All right.
Well, I'm just upset. Basically, what happens is it doesn't charge anymore. And to me, it's an ancient piece of hardware. It's not worth it. But apparently they stopped making those things.
Long time ago.
2005, I think, is when they stopped. And I got this thing a few years before that. So I think it's about time to put it to rest. I'm kind of sad. But again, I think the iPod Touch will be a worthy replacement.
You know, my iPhone a year ago replaced my Trio 650, which was basically running on the same operating system as your Tungsten. Yeah. Slightly different.
Oh, but, okay.
You know, I mean, it was still the Palm OS. And it was not a perfectly smooth transition. But in the end, I'm a lot happier to be on the iPhone. So,
yep, excellent. So, we're going to dive right in here. What happened? So Friday, were you home Friday? Did you dive into this immediately? Or
yeah, I was home Friday. I installed it on two machines. I installed the final build on the house iMac, which had been running the betas since WWDC, and then I proceeded to install it on my. On my MacBook Pro. I had a gig Friday night. I actually did install it before I went off to the gig. I knew I had to just get it installed. We were going to do this show today. I wanted to run it all weekend. I wanted to run it all day today at my desk so that I had, you know, at least a full day's experience on my main machine running the release build. And so I did that. So yeah, and then over the weekend I installed it on Lisa's machine, which actually ran into a bit of a problem. John Martellaro and I talked about it at the staff meeting this morning, and he had a similar problem where during the install, the first thing Snow Leopard does is it copies a bunch of files to your disk, then it reboots from the DVD and proceeds to finish the install. Well, on Lisa's machine, now this is and it doesn't seem to matter because John's machine was not of a similar ilk, but this is the first gen, you know, Core Duo MacBook Pro. It copied everything over and then it proceeds to quit everything during the restart. And it said, cannot restart because the installer app canceled the restart. It wouldn't quit. But of course, by this time it was gone. It had quit and there was no menu bar, no nothing. So John Martellaro, he, you know, threw caution to the wind. He powered the machine down, powered it back up and everything worked fine. I didn't want to do that. I thought, well, if I can get this back up and running. So I used Apple Remote Desktop to launch. I tried to launch the Finder with it. Now, this is different from screen sharing. And the one of the differences that Apple Remote Desktop provides is the ability to launch an application without clicking, inside the Mac. You can just say, go launch this program and boom, it runs. So I couldn't launch Finder because it wasn't showing up in the list, but System Preferences was. So I launched that and that got me a menu bar and I thought, okay, great. Apple menu, restart. No, same thing. So then I launched Terminal and did a shutdown from the command line or a restart from the command line. And that then it came back around and it, you know, it totally worked fine. So.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. So my experience, so I was home Friday because I had vehicular difficulties. I was having hardware problems. But I was there. No, actually, I was picking up my car when they dropped off the box.
Okay.
And it kind of freaked me out because the delivery status first said exception. Then it said exception resolved, dropped off at neighbors. I'm like, huh? Then it said signed for by authorization form. Somebody told me this is a trick they pull sometimes when they really want to deliver something. And,
right. And
there's no one there. So they say, well, I dropped it off at the neighbors.
Got it.
Whatever. But anyway, so I got it. And, you know, I threw caution to the wind as well, because I think I had hinted at the last show. And also, I recently did the Mac Roundtable.
Right.
What a fun bunch there. And we talked about this, too. And during that show, I said, I'm going to wait and watch everybody else screw their machine up. But as I was but my support mechanism was Twitter. So most of the people that I follow and follow me are, you know, in the Mac realm.
Sure.
There are other people, but a lot of them are Mac users. And as I was seeing the reports rolling in, I'm like, you know, there doesn't really look to be any showstoppers here. So, you know, I'm going to dive in. To know what to expect, though, there is a list of incompatible apps that we'll provide a link to this site that did that. Or where the heck is it here? It's a short one.
Yeah, it's snowleopard.wiki.com is
there
probably the most popular one. It's a you know, home, not home built, but somebody built a wiki and basically allows anyone to update it with their experiences.
And that
and
was
it's been
awesome.
Very helpful. Yeah.
Now, the thing is, it rolled over and died like the night before and everybody was freaking out. They're like, because this is what you want to do is look in that list and just make sure there are no showstoppers. They have OK, they have issues, and then they have this will not work.
Right.
So I installed it. I did a full Time Machine backup beforehand because I had a corrupted one. So I did it over Ethernet, and you and I chatted a bit about throughputs and why it's so darn slow, even though it's on gigabit Ethernet. But I backed up my drive. Then I applied it, knowing what to expect. But, you know, I got to say, this was, for me, I think one of the smoothest upgrades ever. And I don't want to trivialize what they did, because I started using it over the weekend, and maybe you too, Dave. There's a lot of neat little things that pop out at you that are buried in the OS in various levels.
All right, well, let's dig into that. Let's talk about some of the stuff we found, because I found everyone has different stuff on their list, which is awesome. You know, and I think we can start guiding our listeners a little bit here and at least tell you what we've found in the, you know, 3 days that we've been using it or longer in
yeah.
various cases.
So,
yeah, go
so
ahead.
I got here stuff that does not work. So I'll click that off real quick. That
okay.
I had. If you have this, then so Spamfire, it's an older spam filter that doesn't work.
Right.
Or it was having problems logging into my ISP. It would keep saying that the invalid password submitted or something. So something screwed up. I don't know what it is. I'm sure it's running under Rosetta. I actually got Spam Sieve as a replacement, and that's working nicely. Eudora works. Eudora 6.2.4 works great under Rosetta.
Right.
As you may know, Rosetta is not installed by default. You either install it, you know, by clicking on an option, or it will prompt you if you're trying to run a PowerPC app.
And just to be clear, mm-hmm. Rosetta, for those of you who don't know, for those
right.
of you who joined the Mac game only in the last several years, Rosetta is the translation engine built into Mac OS X that allows you to run programs that were not built for the Intel code, but instead built for the older PowerPC processors. So it's actually a piece of magic that it works as
yeah.
seamlessly as it does. It's only, I think, 2 megs, right? I mean, it adds 2 megs to the install of OS X, which just blows me away. But yeah.
And actually, in my case, Eudora is running better under 10.5. I would have issues a lot of times where Eudora just would not launch despite Rosetta. So either they fix Rosetta or there's something else in the OS, but Eudora is more reliable now working with Span Sieve.
Well, it's, you know, it's worth mentioning that, mm-hmm. you know, you have, though the Snow Leopard installer doesn't upgrade, and we talked about this last week, so I don't want to go too deep in here again, but it completely replaces, it puts a new OS out there and then mm-hmm. inherits all your settings, right? I mean, that's really what happens.
Yep.
Leopard is gone. So it's not like it was just patching Leopard. It puts a new OS out,
sure.
inherits your settings. So perhaps some of the cleanup or speed up or anything that we see might just be getting the cruft out of Leopard and starting anew. So,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So some quick things and then I'll hand it to you. So
mm-hmm.
some things that did not initially work. I have a couple of VPN clients, Cisco and Juniper makes one. Cisco has a standalone client that gave an error message a lot of times that you get when the kernel extension is not started, and you can try to revive it from the command line. That did not work. The solution with the Cisco VPN client is to uninstall and reinstall it. Don't ask me why that works, but it does. Juniper also, we also use that for a VPN solution. They have a Java-based app, and that did not work. The reason being is that Snow Leopard kind of messes with the directory structure and permissions. There is a fix for that, because one of my colleagues actually said, oh, dude, this doesn't work anymore. And I'm like, that's unacceptable. And it's a Java app. I mean, I can understand a standalone app, but a Java app breaking between the two. I mean, if anything now, there actually is, I noticed, a Java preferences utility where now you can say, do you want a 32-bit or 64-bit VM? Hmm. I think that's new. I hadn't seen a Java preferences before. If you look, Dave, you'll probably see it in your utilities folder as well. So that's a real quickie. And then I'll let you cover a few things. I want to talk, and then I want to talk about kind of the two most amazing things that I found. But I want to give you a little time to
talk. Okay. So yeah, as far as things that don't run, we talked last week about menu meters. One thing that was interesting, and this is worth noting, if you are installing Snow Leopard on a Mac that will not run in 64-bit, i.e. a Mac that is a Core Duo. So there was that's the first gen MacBook Pros, or, quite a few of the Mac Minis, I think were Core Duo.
Are you saying that the Core Duo is a 32-bit processor?
That's what I'm saying.
And I'm with you. And actually, I'm fortunate. The one that I have at work does have the Core too, but there's been a from PowerPC to Core. But anyways, yeah. So there are quite a few machines that have the Core 2, and you can, the Core Duo, and you can absolutely install Snow Leopard. But the caveat you found was interesting.
Yeah, it runs everything in 32-bit because it simply cannot run anything in 64-bit. But what that means is all these very minor, and in some cases not so minor, incompatibilities that have cropped up because of this 64-bit application layer, if you will, don't exist on the Core Duo machines. It surprised me on Lisa's that I saw menu meters running. I was like, oh no, did the install fail? Am I still running Leopard? And then I realized, oh no, it's fine. It's just all 32-bit. So it runs fine. But for the rest of us, that doesn't work. You had some great luck with VPN clients. We heard some reports from some IBMers that the VPN client that they're using has been officially not supported on Snow Leopard. I haven't heard of anyone that's been able to get it to run, but if that changes or if you know anything, let us know. I had a couple of apps that didn't work. One is a geocaching app that you can use to load up your Garmin GPS or whatever, called Mac Caching, and it was having trouble detecting file types, which was interesting. And then, of course, our favorite two utilities, Onyx and Cocktail, that allow you to keep your Mac clean. Things like that will not run until they're updated for the new OS, because what they do is they go out and they clean things, and you don't want, an app built for Leopard going out and cleaning Snow Leopard, because things might be, as John found, in different places. So, as part of the install on all three machines that I did it, I saw a minimum of 10 gigabytes freed up by the install. And on one machine, it was a little over 15. It was almost 16 gigabytes freed up. And now that I discounted swap files that would get freed up on reboots. Anyway, this was raw disk space that was being held up by Leopard. And I'm always pretty conservative about my installs. I never install the language packs. I'm always, very careful only to install the printer drivers I need. So it's very interesting to see, maybe all that PowerPC code or legacy stuff that was hanging out with Leopard, get rid of that. And certainly was nice, especially on the machine that I just downgraded size wise to the 128 gig SSD to have some more room out there. So that's
so I found something that can help. If you go to the system profiler, which you can get to, of course, going to the Apple menu, about this Mac, more info. There is a place you can look to kind of learn the new lay of the land here. And there is a portion of the system profiler. Software is the major category. And there's a little something in there we'll talk about later. But applications. So what happens if you go to software and applications? There will now be two additional columns. And I believe it's architecture. Or no, that's been there before. But then it'll say 64-bit, yes or no.
Right.
there are some Intel apps that are still 32-bit, and there are some that are 64-bit. So,
yeah, it's interesting to be able to see. And you can also get that
to see what's been updated.
You can also get that in Activity Monitor with running apps that it'll show you which Intel apps are running 64-bit too, which is, it can be handy. I mean, I don't think it's anything to obsess over right now. I think it's foundation for the future.
Yeah, in general, as we discussed, 64-bit will, probably.
You know what? I'm gonna take a break.
Yeah, let's save that.
I'm gonna play his discussion. I'm gonna play his little Mr. X called.
Oh,
and
okay.
It's a perfect time, and then we'll jump right back into the stuff John and I found. So we'll let Mr. X take it.
Regarding the 32 versus 64-bit stuff you're talking about, with 64-bit, you have some larger registers also available that allow you to move data through the processor in larger chunks. But the current crop of x86 64-bit processors, just like the when we moved to 32-bit and 16-bit, are able to switch pretty quickly from a 32-bit mode to a 64-bit mode. So that may be all that's happening with the kernel booting in 32-bit mode, is that the kernel runs in 32-bit mode to support, like you said, those old kernel extensions and things. And then when a 64-bit application is using the processor, it's able to access the larger registers and move 64 bits of data through the processor at a time rather than 32. Just my quick thoughts on that.
No, that's great. Thank you. Thank you very much. And actually, we had two articles on the site. One that you wrote last week, John, about 32 versus 64-bit, and then one that John Martellaro wrote today, kind of a different, two different angles on the same subject. So we've got a good resource at TMO, and we'll put some links to those in the show notes.
Yeah, but I think in general, the conclusion is that running in 64-bit is generally better, but on the other hand, processors throughout time, and I've seen this when you've gone from 8 to 16 to 32-bit to 64, and we'll see 128 at some point, no doubt.
Sure.
You don't totally lock out the prior architecture. So a 64-bit processor can certainly run 32-bit code, and a 32-bit environment can try to run 64-bit code. It may have to do non-optimal things, but typically you can move in multiple directions. Though, of course, you'd really want 64-bit code running on a 64-bit everything else.
Sure.
Sometimes that doesn't happen, as we talk with drivers, kernel extensions, stuff like that. So it's probably not worth too much worry. Yeah. And as we've, my article kind of introduced, the progression of 64-bit and how they keep using that term, and it kind of gets confusing because there's so many parts of the system you can apply it to.
Right.
And then you had a article, Dave, that I guess was some pre-installation strategies, which if people are still listening to us, then I think that was successful.
Yeah.
So we got that. Now, can I talk about I got two things that I really like.
Go.
Okay.
Pick one. Pick your favorite, or save your favorite, but pick one.
No. My favorite that I'm going to pick here, and I think I'm in a unique position, the Exchange support. Now, some people will skip to the next chapter here, but the Exchange support, dude, it is Apple. All right. So Exchange, as some of you may know, and if you don't, Exchange is a server-based product made by Microsoft that will handle email scheduling tasks, your basic everyday office stuff. And it's an environment. And the latest one, I think, is Exchange 2007 server. Is the latest one, which runs with the PC, of course, using Outlook, or also runs on the Mac, normally in the past using Entourage, which was a part of Office, and that's their email client. Now, of course, a lot of things have happened, but what they did now, and I wasn't quite sure. I'm like, all right, well, it supports it, but what the heck does that mean? And here I'm going to boil it down in practical terms, because I actually did this. Here's what it means. At this point, Exchange support in Snow Leopard means you have three applications that will get information or interact with the Exchange server. And those three applications are iCal, they get calendaring info, Mail, which makes, Mail an Exchange Mail client, so maybe you don't need Entourage, and Address Book, which ties into the directory maintained. But the thing is, the way they do this, Dave, you got to see it, and you know, I'll send you some screenshots. But iCal, what happens in iCal, there's just an extra group.
Oh.
There's just an extra category now, and I'm looking right here, which is my email address at work, and under it are two additional categories, calendar and tasks. They're already my two existing mobile me things. Under calendars, there's home and unfiled, which is one that it usually creates when it gets confused. But now all those calendars are available in the same iCal interface, and they're differentiated by different colors.
Wow.
Very cool, I think. So it just
works.
The way it works is that you have to go into one of the apps and say, add a new account.
Okay.
And when it asks for the type, it'll say under the type, Exchange Server 2007. When you do that, it kind of runs a little wizard in the background, and it says, hey, by the way, if you're hooking to an Exchange Server, there are these two other apps on this computer that would really like to know about this. Would you like to tell them? So you can pretty much run any of those apps, add a new account or a new link to the server, and it'll take care of the rest for the other apps. So to me, that's just pure Apple.
Wow, that's awesome.
How they did that. So I just happened to run iCal, and then when I went to Mail, now in Mail, I have, and I haven't really used Mail up until this point, there's just a new tab with my email address at work,
right,
all the folders that I've created on the Exchange server, and I even ran this, and within this environment, sent myself an email to my home email from this, and it came from my work address.
Sure.
So it's like, and Exchange is nice too, because Exchange, if you set it up right, can do encryption between the client and the server and stuff like that. It VPNs, it tunnels in. They have a very neat auto discovery service. It is kind of creepy, is that it says, right, okay, just give me your email address where you work. And I'm like, okay. And it's like, I found the Exchange server that handles this. I'm like,
oh, that's awesome. That's great.
It's awesome, but it's kind of, it's excellent from a setup point of view. The user has to know nothing except their email address. And it takes care of the rest. Of course, we have, an enterprise-wide
password. That's a game changer right there. I mean, if setup for everyone else is as easy as you saw, and there's no reason to think that it wouldn't be, and except in, maybe some, corner cases, then now it's, this whole issue of, well, the Mac and a corporate Exchange, pain in the butt, that whole complaint just goes away. It says, tell the IT guy to take a hike. Type in your email address. It'll figure the rest out. Type in your password. And now suddenly you are, as Exchange aware as a Mac can be, and even more so. Yeah. So, that's great.
And to me, the interesting part about this is that so a few of us at work were chatting, because we also use the Microsoft chat thing, Communicator, or you can use Messenger.
Yep.
And I speculated to one of the guys who's actually in IT working on this, and he's a Mac fan, which is relatively new in our place. And I said, does this mean I can ditch Entourage? And he's like, almost, except blah, blah, blah. And there are a few, features not available in the Mail interface to Exchange.
Okay.
A couple of things. I think they're pretty minor, but it's conceivable that you could participate in an Exchange environment and not run Entourage.
That's great.
Based on my limited experience with using the three apps there. So again, it's iCal that lets you get to your calendar. Mail, of course, lets you mail. And then Address Book lets you access a corporate directory of directory information, address, phone numbers, stuff like that. So I think it's a really powerful, first swipe at this. I think they did a really, really nice job. And I think it's great for people, especially that are on. The only thing is, got to be an Exchange 2007. Not everybody has that. There are older versions. I think 2003 is the prior one.
Right.
So you got to have the latest with, I think, all the service packs and stuff, especially if you're going to do the messaging, then I think you really have to be quite up to date. So I think that's the only potential downside. Cause I did have people write me saying, dude, I'm on 2003. I'm out of luck. Right.
I wonder what the adoption rate is right now. I mean, I wonder how many people, of all the Exchange installations out there, how many are on 2007 and how many are on a prior version. It'd be interesting to know.
So that's my favorite. And what would you say if you had to pick one or two, Dave?
I was actually going to go in a different direction and talk about something not quite as positive.
Okay.
And that's something that, Pete emailed me and texted me a couple times. He's like, gosh, I can't get this to install. And he had you had the problem on two of your laptops, right?
Right.
Okay. And my first thought was, he's like, it won't install. It says the disk isn't bootable. And I had heard, because I think Pete told me, that PGP whole disk encryption is not compatible with Snow Leopard. Right. And they announced this. Right. Right.
And my disk was decrypted, too. Though. So that's why.
Right. And Pete said his disk was decrypted. And I thought, yeah, but that's probably it. And he said, no, but I'm having the same problem on my new 13-inch MacBook Pro that didn't have that. You know, I never had encrypted the disk. Well,
this was Victor had this problem, right?
Yeah.
Right. And we saw this afternoon.
Yeah.
Okay,
we all kind of, you know, melded our minds together via Twitter. And sure enough, it was, you know, it was funny because Victor was figuring this out at the same time I'm telling Pete, uninstall PGP entirely from your machine and try it. And sure enough, that's the solution. So having it out there at all. It did something weird on your 13-inch, even though whole disk encryption had never been installed. If you booted up and you held down the option key,
you got two options, two hard drives,
two Macintosh hard drives, two of the same. Yeah. Now this has nothing to do with Snow Leopard, right? Ooh, this is all just PGP whole disk. Yeah. Well, they've got to do some magic stuff and they've got to go pretty deep, to do what they're doing. So, you know, that's it. Now, it's part of our little pre-show. Pete was saying, you know, I can't believe that the folks at PGP got caught short on this one. You know, how could they not have known? And my thought is, you know, tomorrow is September 1st, right? So Apple kept saying September is when this is going to come out. In the past, that has meant September
30th. At 11:59.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, yeah, what, you know, how late in the day on the 30th can we reasonably release this? So I think a lot of people, including the big boys, thought, well, we got a month and we don't. And I think part of that was that Apple felt it was ready. But the other part was that, you know, Apple's got this big event coming up on the 9th, which was announced today. A big music event, and they wanted to kind of clear this out so that their PR team and everybody was sort of ready to focus on the next big thing there. So if you are or ever have run PGP whole disk encryption or even just installed it, be very careful about your Snow Leopard upgrade. That's all I'll say on that. As far as some new apps or some new things we found, Chax has always been a favorite of mine. Right now, Chax has always been kind of a hanger on to iChat. It enhances it. It was the original thing that put it in Tabs. It has a unified contact list, so you can have, you know, your Bonjour and your Jabber and your AIM, you know, stuff all in just one list. It, very, very, very nice utility. And I was, you know, horrified to think, oh no, I'm going to have to live without this too, you know. And sure enough, they released a new version of Chax. It's in alpha state right now, but very stable. But you don't launch iChat anymore. You launch Chax, and it sort of launches iChat inside its own wrapper. It's a very interesting thing. But for anybody that's out there using it and, likes any of the stuff that Chax does, I like it because it auto accepts incoming chat requests instead of saying, do you want to accept? Click this button. It's like, yeah, well, somebody typed something to me. Just put it on my screen. It's okay, you know. So I like Chax, and it was happy to see that it had been properly updated. So that's my thing. Can I talk about one more before you talk about your next thing, John?
I think I have two more positives, but
all right.
Yeah. So go.
Well, I'll start you down a path here. So, some things have changed, right? One thing that Apple does, and we talked about this, I think it was early in August, maybe late in July. We were talking about the adjustment. If you wanted to change the warning, the percent change, if you wanted to go, I'm rewinding here. If you wanted to go into Mobile Me Sync and change the threshold at which it warns you when there is a data change alert, you know, by default, it's at 5%. Some people may decide I only, you know, 25% is good enough for me. Yeah, you used to have to do that in the iSync app, which was sort of counterintuitive since no one ever ran that. Well, it's still there in the iSync app if you want. However, it's also in the Mobile Me preference pane. So far more obvious that it's even an option to change this if you just happen to stumble through. So that was nice to see there. And I'll circle into this and then let you take it, John. The menu let for iSync has changed quite a bit too. On the surface, it looks the same, except that when it's syncing, it tells you what component it is in the act of syncing, right? So, it, you know, it might be calendar, it might be contacts, it might be your Jimbo, it might be Text Expander. If you hold down, if you click on the menu, it tells you what it's syncing at that moment. If you hold down the option key and click the menu, not only does it tell you that, it tells you when the last time was it synced any of those components individually. So it's possible that the most recent sync was only for one thing because nothing else has changed. Well, it then tells you, and it's a nice little glimpse to see, wait, you know, has it been 3 days since my contact synced? If so, maybe I've got a problem out there. So very handy. Now, I think you found a couple other things that are related to that, John.
Yes, there are a bevy of options now. So if you look at your menu bar things, you're going to have a lot of things where if you hold down option, extra cool things will happen. One, I think we both noticed, Dave, airport.
Yeah, that's
you
the big one.
Quite a bit more detail about, and if I hold it down now and look, we get the actual mode of the connection. Mine says 802.11n, SSID, the specific channel, the frequency of it, the security type. I have WPA2 personal, the receive signal strength, the transmit rate, and I don't even know what an MCS index is. Maybe that has to do with the key.
You know, Glenn Fleischman put up a great article about this, and I can't remember which site it was. It might have been Tidbits. It could also have been Macworld. He writes for a couple of people. It could have been Ars Technica, too. But we'll put a link to that in the show notes because it's awesome, and it explains all of that and more. But, yeah, that airport menu
great
thing that rocks. Yep.
Like, I think one thing is the probably one of the more notable, it shows signal strength of the remote stations when it's listing other stations, not just they exist, but
that's right in the menu
relative strength.
Yeah.
A few other things I noticed, both on the menu and in general, Time Machine tells you a little bit more about what the heck it's doing. If you notice, the status messages are a bit more informative.
Tell me this, because I didn't notice anything better out there, but maybe I haven't looked enough.
Oh, no. Well, look at either look at the option or just run it. You will see it'll say, you know, preparing, indexing, it'll give you percentages. Time Machine gives you, and reportedly from what I hear from others, it's faster. It takes care of a lot of these steps where you're wondering what it's doing. So that's all I'll say. That's a very minor one. Battery. It'll show you the battery condition now, which you used to be able to get in the system profiler.
And you can still get it
status
there. Yeah.
But you can now also, again, if you do the option and you click here, it'll say condition and it should say normal. If it doesn't, then it could say condition, replace battery. So that I thought was neat in the menu bars. But probably the final thing, Dave, that I thought was cool.
Yeah.
We got into an extended chat about this. So I was just poking around in all of the control panels, and I saw date and time. And
actually, like, you know what? I'm going to hold you right there because this is a great opportunity to want to make sure we get all of our sponsors in here. I want to get our second sponsor in because this is a great conversation. I don't want to hold it up. CircusPonies.com is our second sponsor for the show, and Circus Ponies makes Notebook at version 3.0. Actually, they made 1.0 and 2.0 as well, but they're up to 3.0. What Notebook does is it allows you to create multiple, if you like, electronic notebooks. Now, these start out in hierarchical format, and you start typing in an outline. It looks just like a notebook, you know, lined piece of paper on your screen. But the cool thing is it indexes all of this. You can pull in PDFs. You can write with a scratch pad if you've got a tablet or if you're good with the trackpad or your mouse. You can, if you pull a PDF in, you can annotate it. If you pull a scanned fax in, or if you get an e-fax and you pull that in, it'll actually OCR it. So you have all of the details right in there. You can then index all this stuff by keyword if you like, by subject. And if you create multiple notebooks, say one for, you know, recipes at home, one for preparing for my vacation, one for schoolwork, one for whatever you want, you can search across all of them and you can search by date. You can search by date that you entered. You can search by keyword. You can search by what you remember typing or something around there and then zero in on it. So this is all available from circusponies.com. Notebook 3.0 is $49.95. Now, of course, there's a 30-day free trial, so you can go check it out before you decide to buy. If you have, if you are a student or staff or in the administration of a school, you can get it for $29.95. So you save $20 there. If you want to buy a 3-user family pack, that's $99.95. So you're saving $50 there. All available at circusponies.com. Notebook version 3.0. All right, John. Now, you said you have a feature that you found in Snow Leopard, and this is good because we started talking about this in our pre-show, and I'm eager to learn more.
I forgot what it was. No, of course not. So I went poking around in all of the panes in the system preferences because they always hide little goodies, and some were very minor. But here's the one that I thought really has a lot of potential and was very cool. So I went to date and time. Yeah, what's there? Who knows? And they have three sub-tabs, if you call it. So date and time is what you'd expect, you know, the calendar or the time and date. And you can set them. You can set automatically using an NTP server, which is a network time protocol server. There's a clock tab, which is the style of the clock and, you know, whether it alarms or whatever. Then there's a time zone one, which normally on most Apple devices, you just identify where you are. OK, I'm in New York City. I'm in Boston. I'm wherever, and it'll set it accordingly. Well, here there was a box that was unchecked, and it says set time zone automatically using current location. Oh, how does this work? I asked myself. So I was on my MacBook, and this is part of the way this does work. So I was on my MacBook using wireless. I rarely wire my MacBook machine. My desktop machine is permanently wired. Though I did wire this when I was doing my backup because I thought it'd make it go faster, and I guess it did. Anyways, so it sits there and it spins for a couple of seconds, and then it puts a pin, kind of like some other Apple apps do when they find a location, especially on telephone and iPod touch devices. And it said closest city, Fairfield, Connecticut. I'm like, okay, whoa, that's kind of creepy. Like, I mean, and this is where I got thinking, and Dave, you and I can have a discussion about this. And the whole discussion is, how exactly is it determining my location? So in this case, I wasn't quite sure, because there are a couple of ways, if you have a wireless computer, you could do that. One way is, of course, and lots of services do this already, you look at someone's IP address, and assuming that it's a valid IP address, you can, there's pretty reliable data out there that can at least identify the pipe or the big massive router that you're plugging into. So it may not necessarily be the city or town that you're in, but it's pretty darn close. And I think for time zone purposes, that's a given. There are some other ways to determine location. And as I found today, I figured out what it was doing because I upgraded my work Mac Mini to Snow Leopard as well. And when I tried to run this machine is wired, it said, please activate airport to enable locating you or something along that. And I'm like,
yep.
Huh. Well, if it's saying that, it's obviously using the wireless access points that it's there, or Skyhook as we know it, to determine location, because that's the only other means that you can use, at least on the MacBook. Of course, the iPhone has GPS. So if you are so my conclusion is that if you are near a Skyhook registered Wi-Fi access point, which to me is not, you know, it's better than nothing, it will provide the location in this. But again, watching it happen the first time was kind of creepy. Now, I know you have some thoughts on the whole topic here. I touched on some of them, Dave, but you've worked in this area, too, I think.
Well, yeah, you know, the thing is, so I tried this, right? And I turned the thing on and it sat and hunted for a little while and then it didn't work. You know, it said, oh, we can't find where you are. I'm like, well, of course you can't find where I am. You know, I don't think I'm in Skyhook's database, my router here at the office. So, you know, why would it work? And then I started thinking, well, why would they limit it to just Skyhook? Why not? Like you said, John, you know, except that okay, this Skyhook thing isn't going to tell us, you know, that we're in 40 feet of some router, but it can tell us that we're within 20 miles of, you know, whatever town that IP resolves to. So, you know, and that, as you and I think both agree, would be more than sufficient for time zone purposes. Now, you know, other location-based services, maybe not so much, but certainly for time zone, you know, chances are you're not going to get it wrong. Now, I complained about this on Twitter, and some people said, well, you know, if you're connected to a VPN, your IP address might not resolve to right where you are. And I say that's true. However, the system is well aware that there is a VPN connection happening and could account for that, or at least say, you know, you're using some non-standard network adapter. Are you using a VPN? And if so, we don't recommend you do it this way. So it could be a lot smarter. And frankly, I think they got lazy with this. And that's where I'm going to start with this.
I agree. No, I agree that they took the existing code base, which uses either Skyhook or cell tower location, because that's what the iPhone is limited to.
iPhone goes one further, though, right? The iPhone has GPS in it. And all of that contributes to location services.
I'm sorry. So you have three. So you have Skyhook, you have Wi-Fi, you have GPS, and you have cell tower. And between the three, I believe that is what the what's called core location in the iPhone clicks through to figure out where the heck you're at.
That's right.
The current implementation in the Mac, which now in their defense, Apple did not check this by default. I would have shook my fist at them if they did, because it would have been a support nightmare, because most people, I would assume the majority of people, are not near a Skyhook registered Wi-Fi access point.
Or maybe
I believe that's what they're doing, again, in light of the fact that the wired machine said, dude, I can't even do this for you. You got to turn on a wireless adapter.
Now, here's something. What I'm going to do tomorrow, and I got to test this out. Maybe it's smart enough to know that, you know, for whatever reason, we chose not to do IP address resolution. And I can guarantee you they're not doing it because, you know, in one of the hats I wear, of course, is making sure all the technology works over at Backbeat Media. And or at least being responsible when it doesn't work. And one of the things that we use is geotargeting with our advertisements sometimes. And to test that, I, you know, use myself as the guinea pig from time to time. And my IP address here has at times said I'm in Durham, New Hampshire, and also at times said I'm in Dover, which is one town over. So certainly within 10 miles. And so not totally exact, but certainly close enough. And I know that I'm in at least, you know, the majority of the geo IP databases that exist out there. So they're definitely not doing it that way. And if they were doing it that way, well, then you wouldn't have to have wireless on to make it work. Right. So clearly they've attached this to Skyhook. But wouldn't it be cool if you connected your iPhone up to iTunes to sync it up? And the system was smart enough to go out and talk to your iPhone and say, hey, while we're talking here, mind passing me your GPS coordinates?
Which they certainly could do that.
They certainly could. Now, we have not seen an update to iTunes.
Any GPS for that matter.
That's right. Yeah. Now, we haven't seen an update to iTunes yet, but there is, I would say there's a good chance that we're going to see iTunes 9 coming out on September 9th, 2009 at the It's Only Rock and Roll, But We Like It event. So
it's all nines, isn't it?
It is all nines. Number nine.
I wish it would have gone to 11, but alas.
We have to wait 2 years for that. That'll be Spinal Tap Day, right? November 11th, 2011.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't follow that closely. Oh. So, okay, but so it's nice to see. It could certainly use refinement, but I think it's a. I've not seen any other, you know, run of the mill PC or computer use location like this baked into the OS. So I think it's kind of cool.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's a good first step. I'm glad they're doing it, but it seems kind of lame. But then again, they're also not out there beating a drum saying, hey, look, we've got core location. Your Mac always knows where it is. Right. You know, it's a start.
Not
so
yet. Which is why people like me and you dig through every control panel or system preference.
Right.
And I'm never going to stop saying that. I'm sorry. I was brought up a...
Yeah, there were OS 9 guys. Yeah, or now, System 6 guys is what we... You know, that's where I started on the Mac. It was 6.05 was the first one I used on my SE30.
I thought I was on 7. No, maybe 6.
I think you were on 7 by the time you got the 2CI, well, right?
Though, actually, no, I think I worked on 6.
No, you were... I mentioned I
interned around late 1980s at GE, and we had Mac 2s, so I think we may have been doing 6 on those.
Okay.
One other thing that caught my eye, security, general. There is a box with a check mark in it. Require password, and it defaults to immediately after sleep or screensaver begins.
Oh, that's nice.
Thank goodness, because you know how many interns I've had to, haze? When they come into the workplace and they walk away from the computer and it's logged into the corporate network with their ID.
We've
played various tricks on them. I'm usually pretty gentle, but sometimes it can get pretty mean.
Dear CEO letters?
Things like that. Or dear coworker who I have a crush on. That's nice. Just talk of legend. Though Dear CEO is good. And actually, we did show one time. It was funny. It was in one of our departments, non-technical people. And we were talking about the ins and outs of email. And he's like, "Oh, what are you saying? That you could just write an email that looks like it came from the CEO?" And I'm like, "Yeah,
absolutely.
Give me a second."
Yeah.
Logged into the SMTP server, logged in, said it was from CEO to this guy. He got the email a second later. And he just had this kind of wide-eyed, shocked look on his face. He's like, "It's that easy?" I'm like, It's that easy if you know.
Yeah, if you know how to do it.
If you dig into the dirt a bit and learn the ins and outs of a lot of email systems.
Your Skype connection stinks tonight, John.
I don't know what it is. I'm getting 24/24. I'm getting zero packet loss.
What's activity monitors say? Do you have headroom?
23% on each processor.
Okay. All right.
I'm telling you, dude, my machine is running lean and mean, as far as I can tell. I see no packet loss. Sample rates are 24, 30 millisecond round trip. That may be on your end.
It could be. You know what? Let's. I will pause the show here. All right. So we recalled you. And we'll see if this gets any better. One thing I noticed, and I do want to get to a couple of these listener comments about Snow Leopard. I don't think we're going to get outside of this topic realm tonight, since we were already past the 50-minute mark. But one little tidbit that I liked, I took a screenshot. And now, instead of it just being, picture 1.png or whatever it is on the desktop, now it actually timestamps it. So there's a date and timestamp with every picture, which is better than it used to be. So, kudos to Apple. I was happy about that. One thing a listener reported to us, John, is that if you take our AAC podcast and open it in QuickTime 10 in Snow Leopard, there's a little button that looks like kind of like the top sites button in Safari 4. And if you click that, it shows all of the chapters of the podcast in a grid layout. So that's pretty cool. You can, you can click on that and pick your chapter that way visually.
Ooh.
Yeah, which is cool. And I can't believe this wasn't on your list, but Snow Leopard now correctly reports disk capacity and begins to, kill off the gigabyte conspiracy or whatever we called it. What did we call it?
What are you saying? How are they measuring a
They're
gigabyte?
Saying 1,000 bytes is a kilobyte, not 1,024, right?
100. Well, that's...
No. It now is doing 1,024, right, John?
I don't know. I wasn't paying attention.
Sorry. No. In Snow Leopard, Mac OS 10.6, now it is in base 10. So storage is the Snow Leopard will report the same capacity that the drive vendor says.
Oh,
because drive vendors, it's at least consistent. It actually perpetuates the megabyte myth, right?
They're consistently wrong now.
Okay. Correct.
Don't know if I view that as
that might not
progress,
be
but at least they're consistently misrepresenting the size of a drive.
Correct.
So when you get a drive that says 320 gigabytes, it's Apple's going to report it, it isn't going to show up as 298 anymore.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Lies,
so,
lies.
So Apple's
all
lying to you as well as the
Yeah, that's right. They're in cahoots with the drive vendors. So this is bad. This is terrible. All right. Snow Leopard's a piece of garbage. Uninstall it. Let's move back to System 6.
No.
Oh, wait. No.
Now, QuickTime Player, I noticed this. Now one thing I did happen that was happened that was a little hiccup. Windows media files that are like .wmv.
Yeah.
At least on my system, as soon as I upgraded and there is now a new QuickTime player, there does not appear to be a Pro. I don't know if they ditched that. Did they ditch that finally?
Yes. It seems like QuickTime Pro has gone away. In fact, it definitely has. Yeah.
So you now have QuickTime X, I believe, or is that what they're calling it?
QuickTime 10.
I will look here. Yeah. Or I'm sorry. Oh, X. Yeah, you can't say X.
No, like dude.
I should have broken that habit years ago.
So
it's now version 10 quick. But when I tried to launch a WMV, it would actually try to launch the little helper app, Flip for Mac WMV. It would try to launch that instead, and it would say, dude, what are you trying to do to launching me? Launch QuickTime instead. So
okay,
little minor hiccup, but once I switch that app over.
Okay. Okay.
In info, what else am I looking at here? Growl has a old Growl will work, but it has a massive memory leak, or at least a memory leak. There's a new Growl beta that will work.
I should install that, because I you know, as I said,
I've seen the light, brother.
I've seen the light. Yeah, but if it's got a memory leak, then I've got a problem.
No, there's like 1.2 B. The existing version, if you look in console, it'll just keep saying, yep, bye.
Oh, not good.
So anyway, if you're on Snow Leopard, or as we call it, SL. Can we be the cool kids yet?
I don't think we're that cool. We're too old.
All
John.
I know is that the Twitterverse really loved it when I used the word Snow Leopard, especially the bots. Oh my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
It's terrible. I don't even want to relive that. It was so traumatic. For a while, I was getting phantom responses from bots because I would use Snow Leopard. And apparently the people, kind of like the people who write spam, they know the hot topics.
Right.
So I was getting, move on.
Okay. I'm going to jump to one of, I don't think I have anything else on my list here. I don't. So I'm going to jump to, excuse me. I never do that in front of the microphone. I sniffed,
it
happens.
There's a button there, man.
I know. Yeah. Well, I don't know
where mine is, but you should know where yours is.
You know where yours is. It's the big button that says mute. Above your microphone channel there. That's the one. All right. So, Paul writes, and said, I have a big question concerning Snow Leopard compatibility. I think this should be a big topic of discussion on your next show. And it was. I'm currently running OS 10 10.5.8 with Photoshop CS3 and CS4 installed. The reason for that is I haven't figured out all the new stuff in CS4, but worse yet, I can't figure out some features that were easy in CS3 but changed in CS4. I'm beginning to regret purchasing the upgrade. I even tried a third-party manual. I read a post on Photoshop forum that said there are some compatibility problems with CS3 and Snow Leopard, but I also read, I believe, from an Adobe site that Adobe hasn't tested this combination yet. I'm trying to get a definitive answer on that from Adobe. This is a huge issue for me since I depend on Photoshop. Do you guys use Photoshop at all? Okay. And then he goes on to say, perhaps some listener can weigh in on this. And please do. I use Photoshop. I have CS3. It is the only version I have. I use it in a very lightweight way. That said, I have used it on Adobe's policy is exactly as Paul stated. They have said, we haven't tested that. It's like, really? Seriously? You got this whole user base, but whatever.
Well, I think there's been a whole controversy around exactly what was said and how it was said.
We've got an article up on TMO.
Okay. Jeff, did Jeff do that?
Jeff took care of it. Yeah. But I tested Photoshop CS3 on Snow Leopard, and for my purposes, it works fine, and I've had zero bugs. So it's entirely possible that there are parts of Photoshop that, either don't work or work in skittish ways. I probably use, 15 to 20% of what's out there in Photoshop, but I have run into zero problems. And I've used it twice now, which is very rare for me. Usually I use Photoshop about twice a month, and to use it twice in 4 days is rare. But I haven't, and it worked fine, and, no problems at all. One app that I will point out, though, that does not work well, and this is all detailed in snowleopard.wiki.org or .com or whatever it is that we mentioned before, is QuickBooks. QuickBooks appears to run in Snow Leopard, of course, but it fails when you try to do certain things like recording receivables and things like that. So if you run QuickBooks, do not upgrade your machine to Snow Leopard. And we're waiting on an update from them. And hopefully that's forthcoming. You know, a lot of people, as we said before, you know, did not expect this to come out this soon. But even still, you know, it's worth knowing. So that's that. Should we move on to some of these other comments here, John?
Yeah, the only thing that occurs to me with the Adobe thing is it was probably an example of how not to handle what your employees say during a major release.
Absolutely.
Is that I don't think they explicitly said it will not work, but what they did not say is that we guarantee it will work. And the lack of that confidence is what because you got to admit Adobe has a pretty big influence on the Mac world. I mean, people, it's their bread and butter. They run this every day. So for the company to not put the time and effort into saying, you know, we guarantee,
right,
which I think they could have done if they had allocated resources, they rather than someone saying, well, you know, if it breaks, too bad, which I think was kind of the
attitude.
That's
sort of what they said. Yeah. If you haven't upgraded to CS4, you know, you're out of luck. Yeah.
So anyways, just, you know, a note to all developers, big or small, though they're big, but, you know, so they can be kind of arrogant, is just think about your poor customers. I mean, come on. Some of them rely on your product day to day. And if you don't keep them in the loop and you know, keep up with the OSs or say, hey, I'm not working with Snow Leopard for now. Just
right.
So moving on.
All right. Bruce writes, I was listening. You talk about Snow Leopard and pricing for the various upgrade options. One thing that you neglected to mention was that the new version of Snow Leopard server marked a significant change in packaging and pricing. Previously, the 10 user license was $499 US and the unlimited user license was $999. Now with Snow Leopard, Apple has deleted the 10 user option and cut the price of the unlimited user license to $499. So it's important to know I will not be upgrading my Mac OS X server to Snow Leopard because it runs on a dual G4 and Snow Leopard won't run on that. But yeah, that is worth noting. So thank you, Bruce. And we should wrap up with Sean here. Sean writes, I thought that you would find this useful. Okay. I run Windows XP in a virtual machine on my Mac so that I can run Autodesk software. After receiving my copy of Snow Leopard today, I inserted it into the drive, forgetting that the drive was connected to Windows. I was surprised to find that Apple has software on the Snow Leopard DVD that will allow you, within Windows, to do an air disk share from a Windows computer. You can either share the DVD or copy the DVD to the hard drive and share it from the hard drive. So this is very interesting. You know, it's that whole air disk thing. If you wanted to install this on a MacBook Air, or a machine that doesn't have a DVD drive, this is how you would do it. But very interesting that, you know, that's out there on the Snow Leopard DVD. I hadn't seen anybody report that. So good to know, especially even if you got a DVD drive that failed. I was worried that the DVD drive in Lisa's machine might be on its way out. And so, you know, nice to know that all this is out there. You got anything else, John, before we wrap this one up? Now, we're going to be gone we're going to be gone for 2 weeks, right?
2 weeks?
Well, it'll be 2 weeks from tonight that we come together to do
That's
this
correct.
Again.
Yeah, so I'm going to be hopping on a plane on Wednesday and going over Orlando for about a week with some friends.
Cool. You're going to the Reedy Creek in Improvement District?
Yeah, otherwise known as Disney.
That's
or
right.
Or Orlando.
Cool. And next Monday is Labor Day here in the U.S. So we are actually going away to family camp for the weekend, John.
Family camp?
Family camp in northern New Hampshire here. So we're actually middle of New Hampshire, but in the Lakes region. Out.
Sounds like a Chevy Chase, Beverly D'Angelo movie.
Yes, it does. Yeah, yeah. I'm sure that that there will be many, many Chevy Chase references, at least for me. So that's
sweet.
For my poor family.
So the only thing I want to mention, Dave, is that, you know, people, even though we're gone, may want to get in touch with us and give us a big bundle of joy when we come back. And one way to do that is to just call us. You pick up the phone, you dial it, if you know what a dial is, and you dial or call 206-666-GEEK, which Dave, I believe, is
4335. So that's 206-666-4335. You can also email us at feedback@macgeekgab.com. You can email us text, you can email us pictures, you can email us audio files, and you can even do that, as we've said many times before, from your iPhone or microphone-equipped iPod Touch.
Well, now you did say feedback@macgeekgab.com.
I said feedback@macgeekgab.com, and you know what, John? I meant it.
I know you did. I just want to make sure people get that one. And yes, you can always Skype us, though, as Dave reminds us, that's probably the worst.
It works.
It works. It just doesn't sound marvelous.
No, it does not.
Especially with some of the iPod submitted comments. Those sound great, I gotta say. I was shocked by some of those.
Oh, yeah. It's changed the audio quality of the comments on the show, having the voice record app on the iPhone. Blog World Expo is October 15th through 17th. We've booked our flights. We've booked our hotels. We're going to be there. Can be there, too, and you can save 20% on your ticket with Observer VIP as the code. We're also going to run a contest to get a free pass to Blog World Expo, and that contest will start before this show resumes in 2 weeks, whatever that is. So come visit us in the forums. We'll make sure to post it on the site. It'll probably be related to signing up for the TMO daily newsletter. So get yourself ready for that. But come check that out in the forums. iPhoneAlley.com is where Michael Johnston hangs out and posts all of his content and actually runs a great podcast over there. So go check that out. He's the one that converts the show to AAC for all of us and all of you. Cashfly.com provides all the hosting and bandwidth for the audio files that we send to you. Podcast Marketplace includes the A2 desktop speakers from Audio Engine, BB Edit from Barebone Software, Disc Label from Smile on My Mac, and also Text Expander from Smile on My Mac, Notebook from Circus Ponies, Pathfinder 5 from Cocotech, and all through the Backbeat Media Podcast Network. And with that, John, I think it's time to get out of here.
I'm ready.
Yeah, me too. Have a great time away.
Yeah, maybe online.
Oh, okay. You gonna tweet your Disney experience?
I could. It's always happy and jolly. Well, except when.
Well, have fun at Disney World and, don't get caught.
Maynard.